You say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
We're back, baby. How's it going, everybody? This is Mark Becker here on the Rational Revolution here with Civic Media. Thank you so much for joining us. You know, it's such an honor to be doing this every week. And I, again, thank you all for coming. We've got a good show for you today. I have my dear friend Carlton, who's here. We had such a good discussion last time, and there was so much that I wanted to get to that he's back. So we're going to do a few segments with Carlton, and then I'm going to share a story with all of you that at the end of the show that I hope brings you something. What it brings you, I don't know, but stick around for that, because I'm gonna share something that that I experienced with my family, and I want to bring it to you as well. So, but to say hello, Carlton Huffman, how are you doing, buddy?
Doing very well. It's good to be back with you. I know we talked a little bit of baseball last week. I'm hurting a little bit on that front with my Braves dropping a series to the Mets. But we got a long way between now and October. So
oh, my gosh.
I think we've got plenty of time to get it together.
Dude, my so Red Sox guy over here, they're about to get swept by the as Todd the God, the producer, is throwing things at me over from the thank God there's a glass window. No, they were up 5-1 2 days ago and ended up losing. They were tied 3-3 last night to the Orioles, and they dropped 6 in the 10th, and they lost. It's like, oh my gosh, the best player, Trevor Story, is going to be out for the season. It's we're hurting over here too.
It's a reminder that both in baseball and politics, anything can happen.
Right. And we're going to talk about some of those anything can happen moments. But I wanted to kind of recap some of the stuff we talked about last week. One of the big things, you know, because just for those of you who are listening, Carlton Huffman is a dear friend of mine. I met him while I was chairman of the Brown County Republican Party, and he was an official here with, I think it was RPW. And, you know, we got to know each other very well and, you know, worked on a lot of different campaigns and a lot of different issues, and really got to become very good friends with Carlton and I think the absolute world of him. And so you've gone on and done many different things since leaving the Badger State. But one of the things that we talked about that really stuck out in my head last week was when we talked about the 2020 election, and we talked about the fact that when you were a Milwaukee official with the Trump campaign, some of the stuff that went down, it was a really kind of a shocking thing to hear the state director telling you to throw a wet blanket over Milwaukee and jam the phone lines to transport companies, and what was it, wreak havoc, I think is what the...
Yep, his exact words.
Yeah, it's crazy, and I've been called by a few different news outlets about that, to be honest. And so I think they were very interested in that, and I don't think we've heard the last of that story. In fact, I know we haven't. So it was really a shocking thing to hear. But you know,
and if I could interject,
yeah,
real
please.
Quick, I would just say that when it comes to just the level of shock, that I think Steve Bannon said it best, and I mean, I hate to quote him in any semi-flattering way, but the entire goal of the Trump campaign was to just flood the zone with excrement.
Yes.
And they do so many shocking things, like ever since he descended from the escalator,
yep.
That, yes, this is shocking. Yes, it was wrong. It was still 4 years ago, and yet it's like almost day by day, Trump is finding new ways to top it, and the officials within his campaign are finding just new ways to just dull our senses to what they are willing to do to get back into power.
So is that kind of how, you know, we're talking about inside baseball, is that kind of how that, like what that strategy is? It's just there's so much that's out there, so many things that are said and done and talked about, and so many like shock value instances that it's like, okay, well, Yeah, he said that yesterday, but check this out. And so, like, you forget about the crazy stuff from yesterday, and you're focusing on the crazy stuff from today. Is that how that goes? Like, that's intentional?
It's very intentional. I mean, it is something that you would see just straight out of any authoritarian or aspiring authoritarian's playbook. And we used to be in a time where our leaders were guided by a sense of virtue. And that's what makes Trump and his movement unique in all of American history, is that Barack Obama, for wherever you agreed with him or disagreed with him, there were times where the court or Congress told him no, and he just threw his hands up and said, that is how the system works. Mm-hmm. George W. Bush the same way. And all the other presidents before them, both those presidents and their parties were guided by a sense of both restraint and virtue. Whereas Trump, as we saw in the Access Hollywood tape and every other facet of his life, he is not guided by that. And right. Unfortunately, the entire Republican Party, and I would definitely love to get into just some of the stories from whenever I left the Trump campaign and went down to Georgia.
Oh, yeah, we're going
to
talk about that.
To see just how quickly that metastasized.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, too. And, I you talk about previous presidents and all of that, and I remember, you know, the first real, like, campaign that I can kind of look at and remember was, you know, like Bush and Gore, and the one thing that from Bush to Gore to Kerry and Obama and McCain, you remember that famous moment when the woman in the audience at a John McCain event said, "Oh, he's a Muslim. He's this. He's that." And John McCain took the microphone from her and said, "No, you're saying these things, and he truly is a wonderful man. He has a great family. We just happen to disagree on some things." And, like, you know, the common decency that would exist between two people that just have some differences, that's gone, because on one side there is someone who is not in any way, shape, or form fit to be looked at in with the lens of, this is a decent man.
And you would just sit there and just look at, I think, from Jefferson and Adams, the very first transition from
yes.
one party to another, you just see so many examples in our history of whenever a political party was defeated, and even in some of the crazy circumstances that surrounded the 2000 election, one thing a lot of Trump people will sit there and say, well, Al Gore questioned the integrity of the result. But I go back to them as, like, whenever the Supreme Court said, this is the decision, Gore said, okay, mm-hmm. I accept the decision.
Yeah.
I wish President Bush well. We still have not ever heard Donald Trump ever say
no.
the words, I lost the 2020 election.
No.
Joe Biden is going to be our president. I disagree with him, but I wish him well for our country's sake. And even Barack Obama, even the fact that Trump questioned his citizenship, even though
yeah.
Trump called him the father of ISIS and so many horrible things.
I forgot about that.
Obama still sat there in the White House, looked Trump in the eye, shook his hand and said, we're going to do whatever we can to make you a successful president. And
right.
that is the difference between Trump and everybody else that has come before him.
Yeah. And, you know, that's profound. And it's, you know, and I was talking with someone who is a huge Trumper. And, you know, and trying to, you know, talk some, like the show, try to be rational about, you know, hey, I might have some conservative ideology, but, you know, it's like, I can't get down with that. And his idea was, look at how the media has treated this man and his family and all of these things. They have put Donald Trump through the ringer, and how they've, you know, just put his family up, and they've ridiculed. It's like, what are you doing to Joe Biden, though? You know, like, this is the same stuff. And, you know, and then I bring up the fact that, well, you know, there was not a peaceful transition of power. What do you mean? He left. He got in the helicopter and left. And it's like, I mean, yeah, kind of. He didn't, like, start a war. He tried to. He didn't start the war. But He didn't attend the ceremony like everybody has, like Al Gore did when George W. Bush won the election. Al Gore was there, as in his role as the vice president. So, like, you know, it's there's so many excuses that's put out by people to just gloss over so many of the reasons and the, you know, examples of why he is unfit.
And I would like to just take a moment. And I mean, we just lost O.J. Simpson the other day. So, I mean, it's like the 90s coming back to haunt us again. Right, but it's been the same thing almost ever since Bill Clinton won the White House. And I can say this, too. I'm very much a partisan person. I still am a conservative, and I will still take my policy issues with Democrat presidents and administrations. Fair. But the thing was that, like, when Clinton won the White House, it was seen as not just a defeat of the Republican Party, but almost an existential threat to America. And that was the way that Rush Limbaugh, Newt Gingrich, and the rise of the modern conservative movement framed that transition. And it went even into overdrive when we had our first black president elected. Mm. And you would have thought that, I mean, they were going to have a march through down to the White House from the Capitol with people carrying the Communist Manifesto, the way that Fox News, Glenn Beck, and all these people framed it. And there was one person who was watching and taking notes through all of this, and that was Donald Trump.
Right, exactly, that right.
Everything is existential. Yep. Every time you lose, it's fraudulent. And the table was already set for Trump. That is the one thing, is that he did not create this situation, and this is something that, I mean, I, as a former Republican operative, I mean, I have my soul searching moments about, I'm sure that you do, Mark, as someone who was a leader in the party, that we were part of that system. We could tell ourselves that we were appealing to the better angels of people's nature, but there was so much around us that whenever Trump came down the escalator, it was just like a light switch flipping, and we woke up in a world that we did not recognize.
Right. This is my penance. This is what I'm doing to make up for it all. As we talk to Carlton Huffman here, former Republican operative on the Rational Revolution, I'm Mark Becker. Come on back. We'll see you in a little bit. Just leave this song go and have a great time here. Mark Becker, welcome back. We are on the Rational Revolution talking with former Republican operative and dear friend of mine, Mr. Carlton Huffman. We were talking about, you know, the stage was set for a lot of chaos to happen, from the election to other things. But I also wanted to talk about a different experience that you had. It's one that really it kind of captivated the country for a little while too. It's funny, like, Carlton, you've had all of these experiences, and it's, you know, you've been where, like, the craziest things have happened, and it's like, there's my buddy. You know, in
very much a Forrest Gump existence in that.
Yes.
Part.
Oh my gosh, it's nuts. And so you know, As people can hear, he's a Southern guy. He got to go down south, go Dogs. I threw up a little bit as a Tennessee fan saying that. You went down to Georgia.
Yes, it was something that I had in mind whenever the campaign was getting into the waning days. I wanted to get out.
What campaign was that? You're talking about the Trump campaign. Got it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I was wanting to get out. I was wanting to get away from the craziness and the chaos. And I had an opportunity through a friend to go down there for what we knew was going to be at least one Senate runoff, because one of the incumbent Republicans had retired, and therefore there was a special election that was assuredly going to lead to 9 weeks of overtime. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this is my exit ramp. This is something where I can step away from the chaos of the Trump campaign. We can just go
take
back
a breath,
to doing normal Republican things. And then it ended up being a double runoff with control of the United States Senate entirely on the line. And I thought, just in my heart of hearts, and this was a little bit of, I think, wishful and overly optimistic thinking on my part, that it was going to just go away, that the craziness of the questioning of the integrity of the election was going to go away, and I wasn't going to have to deal with any of that. And I was very, very wrong, and I knew I was very wrong whenever I walked into a room at the Georgia Republican Party headquarters, and who did I run into but... She wasn't sworn in yet, but I knew very much who she was, and that was Miss Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Oh, God, no, you did?
Basically haranguing. Yes, like, oh. She was in the room haranguing election lawyers about affidavits claiming election fraud and demanding that they do something about it.
Oh, she's nuts. Like, I don't, oh, man. That's
crazy.
And
it only got worse from there. Sent to Southwest Georgia, and this is whenever I knew, I mean, just that there was not going to be a clean break, that there was not going to be an escape for any of us in the experience. Whenever I went to a meeting of one of the local Republican parties, and this was a week after the election, so we had seen a lot of the stuff on Facebook claiming election fraud, a lot of stuff centered around Milwaukee, ironically, with my experience, and we go into the meeting and we're just talking about, hey, we're going to do everything we can to keep control of the United States Senate in Republican hands. And all the activists wanted to talk about was the supposed fraud. What was supposed to be a 45-minute meeting turned into 2.5 hours.
Oh my God.
Of people haranguing their local representatives, asking what they were going to do to stop the steal.
As we're talking to Carlton Huffman here in the Rational Revolution, you were working for what campaign at the time?
I was working for the National Republican Senate Committee, and our job was to help with getting David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler back into the United States Senate.
That's right. That was did you meet them? How were they?
I mean, I got to meet. I did not meet Kelly in that experience. I did meet Senator Perdue. And I will sit there and say it was something I've experienced. I think all of us who've taken that step away from just the normal Republican world, where we just put on our team jerseys and just say red versus blue, go red all the time.
Yeah.
It was quickly striking to me that someone who was as smart and accomplished as David Perdue whenever I met him, and then Kelly Loeffler, very accomplished businesswoman, how quickly they were willing to jump into bed with people like Marjorie Taylor Greene to do anything they could to win an election.
Right. Like, you know, that's just it. Those people would never be in the same social circles. And you know, Kelly Loeffler, David Perdue, I would imagine would have some sensible and rational discussions. And then Marjorie Taylor Greene would come in and just like, firebomb everything, you know. It's just I don't understand. Yeah, I don't get that. But continue. I'm sorry.
And I mean, it just proceeded throughout the entire election that we were thinking that if Georgia just behaved normally, that we were going to be just fine. That we would win the election, just get the normal turnouts because that's what Georgia had always done. But it's one of those things that political operatives and campaign people will describe as a sixth sense, that you get a sinking feeling that something is slipping away from you. And that entire last week of the campaign, you could just feel things were just building up. And this was around the time, too, that Trump made the call to the Secretary of State there in Georgia, demanding that he find the 11,000, however many votes.
I just need you to find 11,000 votes, right? Right.
Yes.
Nothing wrong with that.
I mean, it was just devastating in terms of just everything that we were trying to focus on, that we were just trying to sit there and say, keep Joe Biden's agenda in check. They're going to spend too much money. Just everything that we thought that Republican voters would care about. But you find out at the end of the day that the bulk of these primary voters, the ones who listen to talk radio, who listen to a conservative talk radio, that is. We love the Rational Revolution.
Oh, yes.
But you listen to the ones who watch Fox News and Newsmax every day. Yeah. They want the vitriol. They want the combative nature of everything that Trump and his acolytes give them.
Right.
And so everything that we were trying to do was falling flat. All people wanted to talk about was stop the steal. And you could say, unfortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective, that's not what the majority of Georgia voters were looking for. And so on January the 5th, the Democrats, for the first time in the modern era of Georgia, won both Senate seats and won runoffs.
So this was,
and elected the first African American to a Senate seat in the Deep South as a Democrat.
Yeah, isn't that that's historic? We got about a minute left. So this was the election in Georgia was on January the 5th. Is when everything that was that was the day. Okay, so
and
nothing crazy happened around that time.
We can get into what happened the next day.
Yes, we're gonna talk about that. I think. On the other side of the break here, it's been, you know, it's really interesting to kind of feel the buildup of what is about to happen in the history of our country. And I don't think that story has really been told. You know what I mean? I don't think that we're past or we've accepted what really happened here on that day. We've got Carlton Huffman here, a former Republican operative, dear friend of mine, on the Rational Revolution. See you in a little bit. Rational Revolution here on Civic Media. Hey, you can get us Saturdays and Sundays, but don't forget to download that app as well, and you can listen to all of our shows whenever the heck you want. If you miss something, download the show, and you can listen to it all over again. I would, because we got a former Republican operative and good friend of mine, Carlton Huffman. He's got a lot to say, right? And so on the other end of the
break...
They
don't call me the mouth of the South for nothing.
Yes. So we were just talking about January 5th. The Georgia had two historic wins in the United States Senate. And he was talking about how you could kind of feel something building. You could feel what happens the next day. So describe that. Talk about that.
So, I mean, for months leading up until the 2020 vote, you had Trump laying the basis for questioning the integrity of the election, attacking mail-in votes, which is ironically what cost him, without a shadow of a doubt, Georgia,
right?
Because there were more Republicans who voted. There were 50,000 Georgia Republicans who voted by mail in the Republican primary in Georgia that election, and they did not vote in the general. Because in large part because Trump was bashing mail-in voting. And that was his margin in the state several times over.
That's crazy.
And you could just feel like the next day after the election that, I mean, when Trump had gone out and said shortly after midnight on election night that we did win this election, you just saw the zone was flooded with these Facebook posts and rumors about overvotes and undercounts, and everybody just fixes
in the count,
on
yeah.
the fact that there were these post-midnight ballot drops whenever everybody in the news and everybody who is a political operative knew why
they
that
know
was
what's going to happen.
Because so many people didn't want to get sick.
Well, and that's just it, is like, you know, not to interrupt, but like anybody who has ever been involved in politics understands that that Red Mirage. Red Mirage, what we talk about, is like Republicans, and this has happened for decades, where you get to a big lead and then Milwaukee drops. Or you get to a big lead and, oh, well, they haven't counted the mail-in yet. And that typically leans Democrat. So you know it's coming. Everybody knows it's coming. Everybody knows it's coming. And there's nothing nefarious about it because that's what it is.
Yeah, and I would say that you could just see in a lot of the volunteers and a lot of the people. I mean, I mentioned the one meeting that I went to for a local GOP in Southwest Georgia, that there was just this discernible anger. After the 2012 election, when Mitt Romney lost, you could tell people were bummed, and there was a sense of even despair among a lot of people, but there was not this sense of, we have to do something to stop this.
Right.
Of course, when you have the President of the United States and his acolytes encouraging this mentality, I had several people who were working under me in that campaign who took off early. They took off on January 4th so that they could be there in Washington, D.C. on January the 6th.
Oh, my God.
And
really?
And you knew, I just, as soon as Trump put the message out there, you know they're not just going to sit there on the Washington Mall, wave signs, wave flags,
and
scream at Congress, and that's going to be the end of it. You just, whenever you've got people like Roger Stone hanging out with the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, you know something violent is going to transpire.
So you thought something was going down.
Yeah, and so, of course, we all saw what transpired whenever they stormed up the steps and into the Capitol. And literally, I've worked in that building. I hold that building with a sense of reverence and awe still to this day.
Yeah.
It just felt like it was being violated. Everything that I worked for was being torn asunder. And that's why I ended up texting my former employer, Mark Meadows, who I'd worked on his first congressional campaign. And I still had his cell number. He was chief of staff to Trump at that time. And I just told him, you did this.
Yes.
And it wasn't just the fact that you had so many people intentionally going along with Trump. You just had so many Republicans go silent.
Did he respond?
He did not. He did not respond.
What's his number? Let's give him a call. Let's get him on the show.
I think right now he is still in negotiations with Jack Smith on potential cooperation and
trying
to avoid jail time in the Peach State for his role in trying to overturn Georgia's election. But it is just the sense that so many Republicans, and even those that I still care about and respect in so many ways, they hope that this thing would take care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes counter to everything that I grew up understanding, both as a Republican, but more importantly as an American. You don't let things take care of themselves.
Right.
You have to get up and take action. And because they didn't, not only was the Capitol attacked that day, many people were hurt, including a few officers who died in the few days after the fact. They went along with it to the point that they want to whitewash it and pretend not only that it didn't happen, but that it was actually an admirable thing.
Yeah.
And that is the barrel that we are all staring down as we get closer and closer to November, that the people who did that will be first on the pardon list the second that Donald Trump puts his hand down from swearing the oath of office.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that, too. And we got Carlton Huffman, Republican operative here on the Rational Revolution. I want to talk about that. In my personal or professional life, I own a business, and we had a customer that came who is a D.C. police officer. And he sat in my lobby, and we talked for 2 hours about what happened that day. And the ramifications and the PTSD it was profound what happened to those officers. You know, it shocked them to the core. And I guess, you know, you said when we were talking earlier, you said that Trump had many weeks to build up to this. And, you know, talking about the election stolen, blah, blah, blah. He's had 4 years now of sharpening the sword. And, you know, what happens in November? What happens if he wins? What happens if he loses?
I mean, a lot of it will be conjecture on my part, but I will sit there and say, whenever I'm opting for a pessimistic prediction. I've often undershot the mark. I've actually underestimated how bad it was going to be. I knew January 6th was going to involve some kind of clash between the demonstrators and the officers. I knew that. I did not think that they were going to breach the building. I did not think members of Congress would come within several feet of being like accosted by these people. If Biden wins, you know that there are going to be people who are going to contest the election. We're going to go through the same thing in terms of court cases. And the thing that we have to really watch for, and it's a good thing, you never would have thought I would have said this years ago, but it is a great thing that Janet Protasiewicz won that election in Wisconsin last year, because the court was almost compromised. I mean, Brian Hagedorn held the line in terms of making the correct vote last time, but you had three justices of the Wisconsin Supreme Court who were willing to go along with Trump and throw out Wisconsin's election vote.
Yeah.
Including attempting to throw out my vote, since I voted by mail in that election.
So did I.
But you are going to see election officials around the country, especially in battleground states like Wisconsin, you are going to see them besieged by activists, by people attempting to intimidate them and trying to get them to, in their words, like Trump asked Mike Pence to do on January 6th, do the right thing, which means deliver the election to Donald Trump.
Right.
And we have some fail-safes that have been built into the system since then, but we got really, really blessed and lucky that the officials in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia did the right thing.
Right.
And in 2022, we were very fortunate, too, that a lot of these election-denying, stop-the-steal people lost their bids for the election offices.
Yes.
But you can see it even right now with the RNC under Lara Trump. They are building an army of election observers.
Yep.
And you can believe that these people are going to be doing along the same lines of what I was told to do in 2020 but didn't, is to wreak havoc.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, one thing that scares me, too, is, you know, this is if what happened if Trump loses. Well, if he wins, you know, democracy was so perilously close, and it came down to, you know, from the moment he took office, there had to be an adult in the room, from Tillerson, Pompeo, you know, down to Mike Pence on January 6th. Are those people left?
No. Simple answer, no.
Right.
I talked about it briefly last week, where I was in line to be the state director for the Trump effort, but because I had been critical of Trump in 2016 and in some of the early days of his presidency, I was not considered loyal enough. And if anything, after what Mike Pence did, whenever Pence, despite so many of his failings, did the right thing on January the 6th and stood with the Constitution, they have gone through that organization like a fine-tooth comb for loyalty. And you saw it with so many people recently with the RNC, whenever Lara Trump and the new chairman, Michael Whatley, also from North Carolina, was installed, you saw a whole host of people were swept out.
Yeah. They fired like everybody, didn't they?
It all comes down to loyalty. It all comes down to, if Trump gives you an order or one of his representatives gives you an order, are you going to do it?
Right.
They do not want people like me in the organization who had moral qualms or questions. They want people who are capable and will obey orders.
It's like, you know, it was sloppy last time. You know, if he wins, it was. The administration was sloppy. He wasn't very effective because there were too many adults in the room. Now, he's going to do it better, which is not saying it's like better for us, but you know, the pardons for January 6th people, the pardons for himself, the pardons for, you know, it's just going to, I don't know. I shudder to think about
that. I tell everybody, it's like, I mean, because people will, they have accused me, I know that he accused you, Mark, of having TDS or Trump derangement syndrome.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
But the simple fact is that, hate to say it, we told you so.
Yes.
We were right. We knew this guy was going to be bad news if he won the nomination.
Right.
We knew he would be bad news if he became president of the United States. And I mean, I admit to my culpability in the fact that I saw the Democrats, if they had nominated somebody like Bernie or Elizabeth Warren as their nominee, I went along with it. And that's my cross to bear. But once Joe Biden became the nominee, I sat there and thought to myself long and hard, and I'm like, Biden is probably the best thing that is going to happen to us if we are going to keep our democracy intact.
Right.
And we have only had 4 years to recover from the most unprecedented administration in this country's history in terms of bulldozing the rules of decorum and the normalities that have preserved our democracy since its earliest days. And democracy is a fragile thing. And I just say this to everybody who listens to this. What do you want to do to keep it? What are you willing to do to keep it? Because right now you can do it at a time where there's not that much risk. If you wait until after Donald Trump is declared the winner to get out in the streets and protest peacefully, and in keeping with law and order, if you wait until then, it's too late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and yeah, it's really on people that have a sense of decency and appreciation for what we have. You know, the adults in the room now are us, right? I mean, it's kind of what it is.
Yeah. There is no cavalry that's coming.
Right.
That we are it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's ironic enough that this was what my supervisor in Wisconsin at the time in 2016 told us whenever we had our issues with Trump. But I mean, this was back whenever we still considered Ron Johnson normal.
Right.
But the thought that a Republican winning a United States Senate seat in a presidential year, we thought that was almost impossible.
Right. Well, thank
and
you.
Said,
we gotta head out, Carlton. Thank you. We're going to have you back. This is amazing. Thank you so much. We'll get you back here on the Rational Revolution right after this. Welcome back. Mark Becker here on the Rational Revolution. I hope you enjoyed that the conversation with Carlton Huffman. He has such a huge level of experience, you know, and he knows so many people and he's done so many things. We haven't even gotten into, you know, scratch a surface on some other stuff that he's done and here in Wisconsin. And I appreciate him coming on so very much because, you know, it does kind of go to the core of what we do here at the show. What we try to put out is, you know, the idea that you might not agree on everything, but as long as you appreciate each other, you know, better days are ahead. Now, I do want to tell a story. And so I want you to come along with me on a journey that my family and I had over the weekend, this past weekend. As I'm sure everybody knows, the Great American Eclipse swept across the United States on Monday, and there were almost 32 million people in the path of totality, and about anywhere, depending on what news outlet you read, anywhere between 4 to 6 million people traveled to see it. And a few months ago, my wife said, I would like to go. I want to take our family to this. You know, we don't have a lot of means. We live modestly. We have three children and we're, you know, we do things like we take our children on experiences. We want something that if we do something as a family, we want it to have meaning. Like we'll take our children to Pride Alive to teach them love and acceptance, both of themselves and of others. We'll take them to museums to teach them culture. We'll take them to other cities to teach them how to appreciate how others live. And we show them things to teach them wonder and awe. That's what we do. And so we looked at going to this eclipse because it really is a once in a decade, two decades. I don't know when the next one is. It's a long time from now. Experience. And that kind of goes on along with the wonder and awe thing. And we settled on Indianapolis because it was a close drive. It looked like the whole world was going to descend on that poor town of Carbondale, Illinois. So we wanted to stay the heck away from there. And selfishly, I'm a huge racing fan, and what a better location to watch something incredible than at the world center of racing, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It was freaking cool. They had an event there. It was hosted by NASA. They had, cars doing demonstration laps on the track, and it was amazing. And we got to the speedway. And we sat on, we sat on, I called it the grassy knoll, okay, whatever. So we said it was a hill between turns one and two. And if you look at it, Indianapolis Motor Speedway is kind of shaped like a rectangle. And we were at the top of the rectangle on a grassy hill. And my wife said when we got there, how amazing it is to take your shoes off and just touch the grass with your feet. It was 74 degrees. It was beautiful sunshine. And the day was perfect. And one of the coolest things when we did this was seeing that wonder and awe in my 6-year-old son. He was, there was like 50,000 people there. And he was like one of the first people to catch like the sliver of the moon going across. And he just lost it. Oh my God, there it is. You know, seeing that, and you know, as the eclipse went on, it was hour and a half or whatever as it got there, and you know, throughout this whole thing, I mean, it was kind of slow moving as it started, but you know, kids were running around screaming, making friends, and people were just all together, and you know, and I watched videos of this. I saw what it was going to be like. I knew, okay, it's going to get dark, whatever. But there really was nothing that I could do. I wasn't prepared for how profound of an experience that was. You know, and I gotta hold it together here because I got a story to tell. But right before, you know, and like it right before it happened, maybe 3 minutes, 5 minutes before totality, the temperature dropped. And all of the children that were running around and playing and frolicking, they were just quiet. You could really sense something is going to happen. And then my wife said, take off your glasses, look around. And it was incredible. The sky looked something like, it wasn't twilight, it wasn't sunset, it was just, you can't explain what it looked like. It was just different. It was darker. It was crazy. And then it happened and it was totality. And the quiet, everyone burst out cheering, screaming, oh my God, this is happening. And the biggest thing for me was to see how small I am. And to know that so much more unites us than what divides us. Truly, truly. And to understand how small we are on that little blue rock. And, you know, and like, it was so much more emotional than I expected. I never expected to be so moved by that I understand completely why people chase these things all over the world. And if you have the opportunity to sit in wonder and awe and look at the greatest show in the world for 3 minutes and 47 seconds for some freaking reason that can truly change your life, your perspective, give you an appreciation of others, and just show the humanity of those around you. It was incredible. I never thought it was going to be that much, but it really was. It was moving. It was beautiful, just like you. Thank you all so much for listening to the show. I love all of you. It's Mark Becker on the Rational Revolution on Civic Media. You tell me that it's evolution.